Okay, so SPM week one, we're going to go through the sources we did during the first week with a focus on how you could use them in a teshuva, looking mostly at the sources that I think you could use in a teshuva. So we start off with the Gemara in Sanhedrin 81a, and I think the most important pasuk is Vet Eshet Rehu Lo Timeh Sholei Red Le'umenot Chavero. And the issue here is we don't really know what those words mean. So one interpretive option is to basically read Yored Le'umenot Chavero as the same thing as Yored Imo L'chayev, which you see in other sources, and to interpret Yored Imo L'chayev as entering into your fellow's business. Okay, like just competition of some kind. Okay? But that's the important thing for us, like looking at this Gemara, is that that's an interpretive decision to make. Basically, what I've been pointing out are actually two steps to get you to the third step, where you're saying, Shalui Yored Imo L'chavero is Yored Imo L'chayev, and Yored Imo L'chayev is entering into your fellow's business. We saw Rabbi Sorel Salant saying that he thought the connection between Yored Imo L'chavero is that you don't get any joy out of it, that you're just selling lemons or whatever at deliberately below cost just to drive your fellow out of business. And he compared this to having sexual relations with a woman married to another man, because then she would become a sword to her husband, and the person doing it wouldn't get anything out of it other than the pleasure of sexual relations.
But the point there isn't just that they don't get any they don't have fun with it, but that they're not getting any profit either, right? That in the end, they're not going to end up with the woman because they can't sleep with her anymore, and the husband's not going to end up with the woman. So right, same with driving your friend out of business, but you're not actually making a profit.
There's no economic productive purpose to it.
Right.
So that read of Rabbi Sol Salant is an extreme okimpta as to what Yored Le'umenot Chavero could mean. It's basically saying that all those things that you thought were competitive, that's not what we're saying is a bad thing to do. Only the worst possible and meanest possible interpretation of what it could be. We have a similar thing in Makot and 24a, where David HaMelech has a list of 11 things that the Torah is all about, or alternatively, all the things add up to Torah, in the same way that 613 mitzvot add up to Torah, but we've gone down the list and gotten fewer and fewer as time goes on. The question is, does this make these things important, or are these just morally exemplary behavior? Are these things on the list, quote, actually usser, to use Tzipora Machlok Klapper's possibly apt, possibly inept phrasing? So both of these sugyot have the suggestion at the end that these are lists of things where if you do one of the things, you're a good person, or you get to live, or you get to not falter forever. The implication is that you don't have to do everything on the list. That's just kind of interesting in a moral sense as to what they're really driving at. But the next source I'm going to do is Gemara Kiddushin 58b, where it starts off with these group of people who are Noheg Minhag Rama'ut. So we tell these stories, and we find potential examples of this behavior, being Noheg Minhag Rama'ut. But we avoid labeling any rabbi as a Ramai. We say, oh no, we find excuses for why he wouldn't be like a trickster. We say, he saw that the original deal was gone, and so he wasn't, so to speak, jumping in line to take advantage of this business or marital opportunity. As a side note, I've always believed that in Pirkei Avot, 5th Perek, 20th Mishnah, depending on the counting, when it says Aze Panim Leghanim, I really think that's people who cut in line. Okay? So the Grand Kiddushin is all these people, metaphorically, they jump in line to get this deal, and we avoid calling them a Minhag Ramai. However, we avoid, it sticks to when we get to the story of Rav Gidel was Mahapech a certain piece of land, and then Rabbi Abba came and bought it. And so then Rabbi Abba was confronted with this hypothetical case of Ani Mahapech Becharara, a poor person being Mahapech after a morsel of bread. And Rabbi Abba said that person is Nikra Rasha. However, he was innocent since he didn't really know that was the case. Moving on to Tosafot Yevamot, chapter 4, they present all these cases of Zariz Veniskar, as a contrast to Masha Asa Asui El Shinahag Bo Minhag Ramiot. So, like, sometimes people who jump in line, they're quick and they're rewarded by their actions. But other times, people who do some things that are similar, they are Ramai. They're these trickster people, and it's no good. The Gemara Kiddushin combines those terms, Zariz V'Niskar and Noheg Minhag Ramiut, as if they're not two separate things. That's in the third parak of Gemara Yerushalmi Kiddushin. And he curses someone who sees their fellow buying someone and somehow interfering with it. Maybe he raises the price by showing interest in it, or what exactly happens is not so clear. You have to make interpretive decisions about that Yerushalmi. The important thing is that you get cursed for like jumping into and interfering with someone else's buying of something. Interestingly, the Gemara in Chulin, 82a, defines Zariz V'Niskar as Zariz, you didn't do an Isur, V'Niskar, you get to eat meat, delicious meat. So like, the reward is a very like palpable physical reward that you get, like the result of this business or, I guess, marital deal, to like take that phrasing and push it back into the sugya in Kiddushin. And then we have a list of other examples of where people are Nikra Rasha. Okay? And so part of the idea is to examine which behaviors are Nikra Rasha, and also what are the results of being Nikra Rasha? Like, are they legal, or are they moral and ethical, and what are the results of those? Also, a similar thing to keep in mind is who decides who's a Rasha? Like, do you have to take someone to Beit Din to decide that they're a Rasha? Or can you just decide that they're a Rasha and start punishing them or acting meanly towards them? So in Nedarim 22a, Shmuel says, you're Nikra Rasha even if you fulfill your vows. And Rav Yosef comments that neder, if you make a neder kesherim, that's not a neder at all. But kenidrei rashayim, that is a good neder for nezirut, korban, and shvuah. So you can be a Rasha and you can have good nedarim. You could categorize in Barachot 6b as kind of being Bein Adam Lamakom, because it says if you daven in the Beit Knesset, like kind of facing backwards, it's probably like a four-way machlokes, what that actually means. But we can call it facing backwards in the Beit Knesset. You're Nikra Rasha, you get called a wicked person. And once someone did this, and then Eliyahu appeared to him and said, why are you standing with your back towards your master? Takes out a knife and kills him. So Nikra Rasha, somehow God doesn't really like you, and sometimes God sends people to kill you. But in the Bein Adam Adam's situation, you have like Kiddushin 59a, where it's like raising your hand against your fellow, even if you don't hit that person, you are Nikra Rasha. Rabbi Zeiri says, Rabbi Chananya says, you're called a Chote, and Rav Huna says, cut off his hand. And Rabbi Ezer says, he has no hope other than being buried. Yerushalmi Brachot says you get called a Rasha for following the leniencies of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And we have a longer list of things in the Shir packet. So it's a complex list of the Adam Lamakom, the Adam Lachavero, and other things, some of which are just being tricky or foolish or otherwise. The two teshuvot of the Gaonim, I'm not sure how in-depth we did them in Shir, but I think they're important. The first one, Teshuvah HaGaonim Shari Tzedek 4.1.3, I think the most important parts are, he defines Yoredi Molachayev as your friend is a Baal Malacha, and you establish a store next door. So he tells you what Yoredi Molachayev is. It's your friend is a Baal Malacha, and you start competing with him by establishing a store next door. Probably want to read this teshuva in the context of the sugya we saw today in Bava Batra, around like Chaf Aleph, in terms of setting up a shop next door to someone else. There's also a part at the end of the first teshuva of the Gonim, which is the one in Shari Tzedek, where I would suggest that he's saying that someone who does this is called a Rasha before the Din Torah, and this is speculative, so you know I'm not exactly sure how to read this, but apparently neither is Rabbi Clapper. But he might be saying that after the Din Torah, the result could be, and this is what you have to interpolate, the result could be that it's okay to set up the shop. And then you can even set up a shop right in the other guy's face. Okay? So it's he's kind of saying, like, it's an interesting combination of extra legal and legal reasoning. Like, before the legal system is able to deal with the situation, such a person is a rasha. But after the legal system then gets involved and is sometimes able to say that the person isn't a rasha anymore. That would be really interesting if it was true. But I don't know. We'll have to think about it.
Are there any other ways to read that? I was had trouble with this last
time. Any suggestions? Just reading Tshuva Hagonim 4:1-3, Shari Tzedek. We can talk about this.
What page is this on?
11. Take a look at this. So do you want to focus on my suggested reading in the last two lines or the whole thing?
The last two lines.
Okay. V'amar Rav Huna, Brady Rav Yeshua, Pshita Li, Dabar Matza, Abar Matza, Achriti Matzia Ma'akev. And then, okay. Hacha, the Dekari Le Rasha, the Lo Dina. Okay? So I want to put a nikudah there. I want to say, okay, the person is called a Rasha before the Din Torah. Paskina Dina Ale, Da'ati Mokim Lechatchila Bahadei. But after the Psak Din upon him, then you can come and establish Lechatchila, Zimakalach Lamaisa, Lechatchila, go ahead and do it. Bahadei, like in his face, you can go and establish a shop that competes with him, if in fact the Din Torah is that you can do this.
So it's sort of like, and this is such a case where you're guilty, but the Beit Din can find you innocent, or can find you innocent of all wrongdoing.
I'm suggesting that at first when you set up a shop, the person is justified in treating you as a rasha, but then they have to then also, or eventually Beit Din has to get involved, and then Beit Din can decide if you really are a rasha or not. So that would be a really interesting shiluv of the legal and extra-legal aspects available to being a rasha in competition. Yes, we don't.
This is a possible reading. I'm not sure if it's right, but maybe we could read as Hacha b'tikari le rasha b'lo dina. In this case, in which we call him a rasha without a formal, ruling, haskinan dina le da'ati mukim lechatchila behedu. We, nevertheless, are posek din on he who was. And he, the Rasha, who came first, Lechatchila, who first came and set up a store in competition.
Can you say that again?
Meaning, what I'm trying to say is that the Paskinan Dina Ale, so the question is Ale on, is Ale saying we allow the aggrieved party to retaliate, or is Ale saying we are posek din against the Rasha who was the one who was mokim, who set up his store in the first place? I'm not sure if it holds that, but...
I don't know. It's, in any case, it's probably somewhat fragmentary, so it's hard.
Right. Thank you.
The next issue of the Gonim is Gonim Kedmonim 136. And he talks about a poor person going after the bread. That's the Ani HaMechapech B'Charara. And you swoop in to take it. You're called a Rasha. But even though he's called a Rasha, Beit Din doesn't have the power to remove the bread from him or undo the sale. So it's Afal Pishni for Rasha, En Koch LeBeit Din LeHotzi Ah Miyado. And so this is in contradiction to the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, which the Ramban and the Rashba quote later on. So the Shita of Gonim is that if you violate Ani HaMechapech B'Charara, still Beit Din can't come in and force you to undo the sale. I'll mention it later, but in a possibility is that maybe Rabbeinu Tam never said this. The other thing, very important linguistically, is that in the Teshuvah of the Geonim, he calls Ani HaMitapech B'Charara, he calls that Minhag Ramayim, which connects to the previous sources about being Noheg Minhag Ramayim. So if you want to see linguistic how it all fits together...
Maybe. Didn't he say it's possible?
Sorry, can you say that?
This Teshuvah of the Geonim says that Ani HaMitapech B'Charara is a case of Shenahag ba minhag haramayim. So he says that behavior is a kind of trickstery behavior.
I thought... that Alphabin Shenhag Woman Hagamayin could be attached to the following case, which is not that different, but it's a little bit different.
Mi shmitasek in chaviro liknot mimeno chefetz.
I have my notes from the
shiur. Uba acher v'kana oto chefetz.
Yeah.
We see other people who define that as that's the case of ani hamehapech becharara. In fact, there is a dispute about ani hamehapech becharara as to whether or not it applies to things that no one owns.
Right.
But I don't think there's any disagreement that it applies to when one party is selling to another.
I think in Shir we rather kind of said that we might have to differentiate between those two cases. I think Tola's remembering correctly.
Between Noheg Bo Minhag Ramayim.
That's why the first case of Anima Pech Bechara is not identical to Mishim Etasek of Chavero. Perhaps this talks about and hence the following, the last line of this is like a subset of that second.
No,
piece.
Wait. What we said in Shira was that the second Afal Pin might not connect at all to the Misha Mita Sekim Chavero. Misha Mita Sekim Chavero might be different than Anu Hafei Makoro, but might not be Min Hagroim. Rabbi Klapper mentioned that as a possibility, I think.
Because the Mi, you could start a new paragraph at Mi Shmita Sekim Chavero.
Yeah.
We weren't sure where to read that afalpi as part of the first half.
Yeah.
Well, but the second part is a different ruling, right? So it needs to be some difference. I think that's the problem. Afalpi shenikra in koach lebetin lehotzi miado, and then we have a split up of a whether midato.
Okay. What? If you connected the two, what you would get is the nice definition of ani hamepech becharara as mishmita sekim chavero liknot mimeno chefetz. But you can get that from other sources, so you don't need this source for that. What you can get out of this source, even if you start a new paragraph before mishmita sekim chavero, you can still get the connection between minhag haramayim and ani hamepech becharara.
If you make them the same case, what do you do with the last bit of the tshuva?
So first of all, it works very nicely as an explanation of what the case of ani hamepech becharara is.
Right.
And then it explains that if the guy outright stole the chefetz from the mocher, then he does in fact have to give it back.
Oh, so this is a very different reading than we did in Shira. But I find that.
It's saying imidato shel mocher lacha ein koach lehotzi miado. The point is that afalpi shenahag min hagramayim, the sale is a sale. But if the guy is a huge trickster, not only did he just jump in and steal this thing and get the legitimate business deal that the other person was interested in, but he actually just swooped in and stole the thing from the seller. Then he does in fact have to give it back because that's gazela. Or Geneva, whatever. Depends on the case. But yeah, he would just have to give it back.
He's stealing it. Maybe the mocher just doesn't know that the other guy wants it.
But the case is im shelo midato shel hamocher.
Yeah, so maybe you have two people who run a store, and one of them was talking negotiations with this guy, and then the other one sold it to this other guy. The guy to whom he sold it knew that the other guy wanted it. But the guy who sold it to him didn't.
There's only one mocher in this teshuva.
That's
fine. It doesn't have to be, though. Shalom Adas mocher doesn't have to mean he stole it. Because then...
But stealing it is a good explanation as to why you would have to give it back. If you held that the din was really not like Rabbeinu Tam.
So why bother saying Shalom Adas mocher instead of just saying, I'm gonna vote, or...
Well, I think, for me, the reason why it's a plausible Havamina is because this Ramayi is like a trickster.
No,
so, a trickster person would jump in, take the thing, and then maybe he would get around to paying later.
The word not low implies no payment, right? Which, yeah, it's fine. Right? You don't have payments enough to come first.
Where do we get into this whole stealing business?
Im shalom midato,
not
low. Im midat hamocher, these two things come together. It's as if you're taking the thing from the mocher without the shopkeeper's knowledge.
I don't think,
just take it.
I don't think either reading can really be discounted. That's like fine, but
okay, yeah. So I'm giving you an alternate reading which you can use. You might find it interesting to be able to want to quote a teshuva of the Gaonim to go against Rabbeinu Tam.
So
right?
We're certain here that it's the case where he's still in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds to me.
Fine. Oh, okay. That's very good. So I offered my read of the teshuvot of the Goanim. Okay, so Yoma 75a. So with Rashi, what we're saying is that if someone goes after you, usually you a human go after them, and then with Rashi it's whatever competitive tactics you can come up with. We weren't sure if this was more than setting up a shop next door to him, or less than setting up a shop next door to him, because it says Yored Imo L'Chaya B'Chol Davar Shu Yachol L'Haknito L'Hafsido Hu Yored, and that's kind of it's your response to someone going after you. So that could be setting up a legitimate business, competing with someone else. It could be doing everything but actually competing with his livelihood. Or, you know, like, theoretically, there's no reason why you couldn't read into this going farther than just competing with him and, like, burning down one-third of his crops. But the important thing here is that you are responding to the Rasha as if in kind. Okay. And even though it's not exactly clear what Rashi is saying, and it would be difficult to build a consistent shita out of Rashi as to what he means, because he does contradict himself, but so do, like, three other Rishonim. So good luck with that, guys. The next source I would look at is the Ritva to Kiddushin. Okay, Ritva to Kiddushin. He says this is all Mida Kneged Mida. For me it's on page 13. So Rasha Yordi Malachayev, Mira Kneged Mida, Dihum Abid Mamono Mimenu Chiyuto, Sharasha Ein Habriot Merachmim Alav, Vaf Ze Ein Beitim's Kakinlo, Elo Mutarlo Lered Lumnato Lahaf Seed Chiyuto. So part of the Ritva is that it's all Mira Kneged Mida, and also part of the Ritva is that you don't need to go to Beitim to do this. It just becomes Mutar for you to be Yored into his Umanut, and to Bimafsid his parnasa. So you can compete with him in any which way. The Ritva doesn't permit you to go too far, though. You don't get to go farther than that. You don't get to burn one-third of his crops. You just get to hurt him in ways that are perhaps... Well, one way of reading this is that competition with other people, strictly speaking, who lose a certain level of protection, is mutar. Maybe because it was never asur to begin with. That's a slightly more radical read of what this whole category is like. Yes, I know.
I think the two ways of understanding Midah Kneged Midah, one would be that what you do to him has to be commensurate to what they did to you, which would limit it to only setting up another store. The other point of view, which I think reads a little bit better into the text, is that since somebody who calls you a Rasha is trying to cut you out of civil society, likewise, they're out of the protection of the law, and you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But Midakim, I think it holds both reading.
Okay, but they're not. It's not that the Briot are going to go after you, just they're not going to show any mercy to you.
Who's that?
The Briot are going to withhold mercy from you, so perhaps not competing with other people's livelihood is like a form of mercy that we, as if a courtesy, exhibit to our fellow Jews in good standing, and then we will cease to extend that courtesy, but not violate any surim, but I mean, you're already email l'chayav. I'm suggesting that as a possibility. My next source is, skip a bit to 14, for me it's page 14, the Hago Maimoniot. He's on the Rambam, Chovel Mazik Perakei Halacha Bet, where the Rambam says, if you raise your hand against someone else to hit them, you are Nikra Rasha. And so the question is, so what? You could turn this into an interesting hashkafic thing where doesn't everything the Rambam say, isn't that a halakha? But we don't have to go in that direction. The question, so what, is very strong. So what, you're a Rasha. So the chakira I like in Rasha is legal or extra legal.
But
is so,
this inside the Hagavad memo you're saying? So now you're going outside?
I'm giving you his context.
Okay.
He's commenting on the Rambam. Rambam has the din that if you raise your hand against a fellow Jew, you're Nikra Rasha. We saw that source earlier. That was the that was Gemara in Kiddushin 59a, where it says you're Nikra Rasha, Nikra Chote. Rav Huna says cut off his hand. Rabbi Elazar says he has no hope other than being buried. So very strong rhetoric, but is it actually usher? And what are the results of it being actually usher? So he gets the Hagot Mamiot gets very legal. He says you lose the ability to give testimony in Beit Din. But okay, so by the way, like, I just want to point this out to everyone. Like, when you write a teshuva, if you decide that one of the parties is Nikra Rasha, and you apply the legal reasoning of the Hagot Maimonides that the person loses their ne'emanut to give edut, that is almost a way of guaranteeing that they lose the Dvar Torah. They lose the Din Torah, like instant kill, because now they can't give edut. Okay. This is what I think is a good idea, and it's like my gift to you for coming to Chazarish here. You have this option when you write the Teshuva. You can decide that someone's a Rasha, and then you can apply the reason of Hagot Maimoniot, back it up with the Pitchei Teshuva, which we'll get to, and boom, they're dead. Yeah, because it'll be impossible for them to.
Why is that a good?
Well, I'm part of this is I want to make part of this is to make people who create halakha more self-aware of the power that they have and the choices that they make.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the, that's one of the meta goals of this Beit Midrash and this summer and every summer here, I think. And so I just want to point that out to you as well as to give you that option.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you decide to not exercise it, you're choosing to exercise it.
Technically, what is Din Torah when you say that? Like, what?
Let's say I see you in a Jewish court or I take you to Beit Din.
Okay.
That's
like just the
Yeah, and if you have a Din Torah,
like
go to Beit Din. Din Torah, you go to Beit Din, you're following Halakha. If you turn the person into a Rasha, and they won't be able to give testimony, then they won't even be able to say, like, this is mine. Like, theoretically, the way he describes it, Shaposkin Dino Ken, Likroto Rasha, Pasul Edut, Ulch Sheknegdo Nishba Venotel Aj Yeshuv Mirisho Vikabel Din. So you can turn it into a situation where all the other party has to do is take an oath that their claims are correct, and then they can take their things.
But that's
Yaakov?
Just a thing. On to your meta part, you would also need to feel comfortable as opposed to say Paskin of like three Ravans and the Hagot Maimoniot if you call them a Rasha.
You have the Maharam, though. The Maharam in Wittenberg is there.
If if you feel comfortable enough passing like what seems like a dearth of evidence comparative to
Well, when we get to the Pitchei Teshuva, let's see how comfortable you feel.
Fair enough.
I think it's extreme to outgo from seeing that someone is Basule to to saying that they can't even claim that this thing belongs to them.
Yeah, but that's why it's very interesting that the Hagot Maimoniot says this. My read of what he's saying is that the other person can just take a shvua and take their claim, is that it's actually as if the party that was Nikra Rasha lost one of the biggest Kalim and Mamonot, that Hamotzi Mechaviro Alav Haraya, that possession is the most important part of the law. That if you want to get money from someone else, you have to prove that you have a right to take the money from them. That if the person is a Rasha and they're unable to give edut, it looks like the Hagot Maimoniot is saying they can't even say, this is mine, or I had the pre-existing right to this. And that's why it's so easy for the person against them to just take it.
But they still need to take a shvuah. That's not enough.
That's true. That's totally true. That's totally true. You would have the other party would have to take a shvua that they were sure about their order of events.
But and he can bring Adam who testified for him.
That is correct. He could bring if he was able to bring other Adim, then he would be okay.
If he's mechayev shvua, he's gonna lose. I mean, unless he can get rid of the chayev shvua, but depending on the case, he can't.
Right. He could never personally testify on his ne'emanut. So
he can never take a shvua, so he can never win a case where he has to take a shvua.
He can never win a case where he takes a shvua.
But if someone's pasuled, they can still bring witnesses.
Yeah. But eventually it would have to come down to some kind of there are many situations that would come down to some kind of personal ne'emanut.
But not always. Like, it's possible for him to get the distinction of Russia reversed, and he's no longer Russia.
Oh yeah, so it says that's very important. It says Aj Yeshuv Merisho. This is only until he then returns from his, and when he does teshuva, then Beit Din will reopen the case.
Right. So it seems that he's not even like they throw him out of court until he can do teshuva, and then only then they can take him back. Is that what this means?
It could be. And so then, in the next half of the Hagot Maimoni, the Maharam extends this Nikra Rasha, and being Pasul Edut, to the case of Ani HaMehapech Becharara. Okay? Which is widely applicable. Okay? Like, you can imagine most cases that we have, it's possible that someone could be in a situation that could be labeled Ani HaMehapech Becharara, and then it would be possible to decide that they lose this Din Torah.
Are we all going to be asked the same shayla, and everyone writes a different tshuva, or
yeah, same shayla?
That's what we did. That's what we've done in previous
years.
Yeah.
So we all same shayla. We all write our own tshuvas, and then we try not to be mean to each other about why we all think each other are dumb.
Oh my gosh!
That is not actually what happens.
And also, Rick Clapper writes a tshuva.
And then when
we really
that's true.
Okay, so the next sources are the Ramban and the Ritva. They tell you about Rabbeinu Tam and how he thought that anytime you are Nikra Rasha, Beit Din requires you to, is it give back the monetary gain from having the transaction then? Or is it you give back the money, you get the money given back to you, and then unstated, you have to give the chetetz back. It's possible that Rabbeinu Tam does not actually mean that the sale is void. He might just mean that you have to undo it or make good on it. It might be he's not saying that it's a void sale. And
it's really not clear what Hachzir Damim means. I think
he means those things. Yeah, Hachzir Damim, like, I'm pointing out that it's not necessarily that it's just like a mekach ta'ut, that the whole thing is undone.
Can you explain the difference between
that? So in a case of mekach ta'ut, which I think is basically how the Ritva reads Rabbeinu Tam, and says, well, that's ridiculous, because we saw the sugya in Kiddushin 58b, where Rabbi Abba didn't have to give the land back to Rav Gidol, and they like had this weird compromise, or lack of conclusion, where they just let the land sit fallow, and the Talmidim like took walks on it, or whatever. Instead of that, he's like, hey, look, he didn't have to give it back, so therefore you, Rabbeinu Tam, are wrong. But Rabbeinu Tam could be saying that you have to give the money that your monetary gain from getting the transaction then and there, or like, let's say you bought something rare at like low prices, so maybe you have to make up to the other person the price difference that you got, or compensate them in some other way. It's not so clear. It's not necessarily just undo the whole transaction. And that would remove one of the proofs against the Rabbeinu Tam that the Ritva brings just from Kiddush of Fiat B. And in fact, there's strong rhetoric in the Pitvei Tshuva against Rabbeinu Tam for saying this. We'll get to that. Whatever, but like, maybe Rabbeinu Tam didn't actually say that. Maybe you were just beating up on a straw man or a weak man or some kind of logical fallacy. So.
Wait, what could he have been saying?
He could have been saying you have to make it up to the person whose business opportunity that you stole. Or give him the money that you gained by or the difference between this and the next available piece of land. Because you stole the business opportunity, not the whole thing. And what's interesting about this, and kind of relating to that reading of Rabbeinu Tam, but also back to Kiddushin 58b, is that Rabbi Abed didn't have to give it back. I say his Rabbeinu Tam's critics, the Rashba and Pitchei Tshuva, are correct that he didn't have to give it back. However, the fact that it kind of sat there fallow, that shows that Rabbi Abed felt bad about the whole thing, and that there was some kind of beyond the letter of the law moral valence to not taking advantage of this metaphorical morsel of bread that he swooped in and took from the metaphorically poor person. That there, somehow Rabbi Abba didn't feel like he was 100% in the right. So this kind of relates to, is it actually Asur or what? Or are we in this like moral fuzzy ground where like, no, there's more to do. You have to figure out how far beyond the letter of the law you are willing or able to go and what you can do without giving up your own personal integrity or whatever. Whatever is a weak word. I'm trying to say that. Okay, so then I just want to finish with the Pitchei Tshuva. Pitchei Tshuva starts off with the Sefer Ara D'Rabbanan, which says, okay, I assume that an Ani Shulchan Aruch says Ani Hamepech Becharara Nikra Rasha. So then this Achronish Sefer comes in and says, okay, your Nikra Rasha is this D'Rabbanan. Is this Medivrei Sofrim, or Dvar Torah, or what? Are you a Doraita sinner? Are you a rabbinic sinner? What? So then he quotes the Maharam.
That's Ramah.
That's Ramah. Moram. Yeah, that's usually how Sephardim refer to the Ramah. Quotes the Ramah as saying that if you lift your hand to hit someone else, your pasul le'edut, just like the Maharam said in the, just like Maharam said in the Hagot Maimoni, but then the Ramah says midrabanan. Okay, so it looks like they think that the same thing would be the case here. That just as you raise your hand against a fellow Jew, then you are nikra rasha, and your pasul le'edut midrabanan. The Ramah says so too. It should be the case here where you violate the isur of ani hamepech becharara. But then the Pirchei Tshuva says, I don't know why that Achronosh HaSefer didn't read the Sma, the Sefer Mi'irat Einayim, which says another place that even though Ani HaMe'apech B'Harara isn't an Isur D'Oraita, even though raising your hand against a fellow Jew, hitting a fellow Jew is an Isur D'Oraita, okay? If you hit him enough to cause more than a pruta of damages, you have to pay the damages that you cause. If you hit without enough force to cause a pruta of damages, then you get malkut. You get whipped 39 times, or as many times as Beit Din sides you can withstand. But that's all Din Torah with the Sanhedrin doing Onshin, and yeah. So, and the Sma says that So the Sma'ach says, clearly this is an Isser D'Oraita, therefore it's only Midrabanan.
What, can you
say
that
again? Yeah,
Actually, no. Sma'ach says this is an Isser D'Oraita, and with the Hava, Sma'ach says that hitting your fellow Jew,
straight,
which is Nikra Rasha, raising your hand against a fellow Jew, not actually hitting them, is an Isser D'Oraita, with the Hava Amina that you would get Malkut for it. Okay? And so the mashmuth of this would be that if it's an Isser D'Oraita, then it should cause a Psul D'Oraita. And that's why the Pitchei Tshuva is using the Sma against the Rama.
No, the Ar
D'Rabanan. Ar D'Rabanan using the Rama. Okay? But then he quotes his Tshuva of the Ma'arit, which says that it's a... So it's Nikra Rasha Medivre Kabbalah. Divrei Kabbalah is this, like, similar to Medivrei Nevi'im. It's this interesting layer of Isur, or Tzivui, that exists between Doraita and Durabana. Okay. Ah, so then we get to Rabbeinu Tam in the Pitchei Tshuva. Skip to that. How can I find that? Okay, so it starts after the Tshuva Chatam Sofer. So, like, there's a paragraph break, about, like, one line with Chatam Sofer, Ayin Shuvat Chatam Sofer. Then the next line, it's Ayin Be'er Heitiv, where he quotes the Ritva, who says, Nei Rabbeinu Tam, De'kol makom she'amru chachamim, de'nikra rasha, mechaivim oto lahach zir hamekach, v'huz zirchono levracha, cholek alav. So, yeah. So Rabbeinu Tam had this shita that you have to undo the sail, and the Ritva disagreed. Or the Be'er Heitiv disagreed. And so then he says, no. No. No, 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 no. And he says, you know, all the Achronim said that B'malkom Shnikra Rasha, Mikol Makom, he says that all the Achronim say that in a situation where you're called a Rasha for your selling or buying situation, you don't have to, Beit Din doesn't require you to reverse the sale. And then they quote the Gemara in Kiddushin with Rav Gidl and Rav Ada as proof that you don't actually have to undo the sale. Kind of ignoring the fact that Rav Ada felt bad about the whole thing. And you know, then he says, you know, everyone agrees with me. Absolutely everyone agrees with me. And so therefore, Tamea ani im yatsa devar zemi pi Rabbeinu Tam zal. He says, this is so crazy. How could Rabbeinu Tam have possibly said this? I can't really believe he even said that. And he says, Rabbeinu Tam is so great because he could have reminded all of Israel of all the whole Torah with his brilliant reasoning, and he messed up in this one. And he says, Ga'ani lamatzati remez b'chol poskim shum tzad havamina lachzor hamekach ela likroto rasha. He says, I looked at everything else other than Rabbeinu Tam, and no one said they should undo the mekach. And I'm suggesting maybe Rabbeinu Tam never said that. Maybe he was misunderstood, and he really just meant that you have to make good on the damage that you caused if you were mehapech, and if you violated the Isser of Ani mehapech becharara. Like, as if jumping the line on that one. Also important, Pitchei Tshuva says, if you didn't know that the Ani was going after the charara, obviously that makes you not a rasha. And so then you'd ask, well, wait, what about that whole thing in Kiddushin where, you know, Rav Ada felt really bad. He says, ah, that's all midat chasidut. Which, again, is another problem with the way Pitchei Tshuva was reading this, which I think I'm suggesting could be answered by reading Rabbeinu Tam as saying that, no, you'd have to still make good on the damage that you caused to the poor Ani, Bim Hapech Becharar. And kind of fitting in line with how the Pitchei Tshuva isn't thinking in those terms, his last paragraph is all about how even if you did this on purpose, or even if you gave back the Mekach, he doesn't even think that you could undo the bad thing that you did. He's really not thinking in those terms. He doesn't think it's a kind of evil thing that can be undone. And for him, what that means is that Ani HaPech Becharara is a very, very bad thing, because you can't even undo the bad that you've caused. Which, I guess if I'm going to the land of Drush, it is kind of how would fit well with what we started off with in Sanhedrin about being Metame Esha Rehu. That if you commit that kind of adultery, you can't undo it. You cause damage that you can't solve. So that's how to fit it all back together. If we have as until 8:06,
8:04.
804.